The standard formula for mindfulness is just to keep the body in itself. The standard formula for mindfulness is to keep track of the body in and of itself, ardent, alert, mindful, putting aside greed and distress with reference to the world. You do the same with feelings for themselves, mind states for themselves, mental qualities in and of themselves. There's a large sutta devoted to explaining part of that formula, what it means to keep track of something in and of itself. Because the sutta is so long, many people assume that it's taking care of the whole issue. But there's a large part of the formula that's not treated in that sutta. Particularly, what does it mean to be ardent, alert, and mindful? And how do you put aside greed and distress with reference to the world? It's because of this lack that Ajahn Lee may have decided that when he wrote about Satipatthana, the establishing of mindfulness, he was going to focus on those three qualities, ardent, alert, and mindful. It becomes the structure for his treatment. And he carries it all the way through to awakening. How ardency, alertness, and mindfulness correspond to different aspects of becoming awakened. He translates these terms as pretty much they're used in the canon. Ardent is with right effort. Alert means you're watching what you're doing while you're doing it. Like right now, you're focused on the breath. And you're also alert to what the mind is doing as it tries to stay focused on the breath. The ardency there would be to keep at this. If you find that you're wandering off, you bring it right back. Then mindfulness, you keep something in mind. In this case, you keep in mind the fact that you want to stay with the breath. You also keep in mind whatever lessons you've learned from the past as you've gotten the mind to settle down. Now, of those three qualities, Ajahn Lee identifies the ardency as the wisdom faculty, the one that burns into things and understands them. This is related to the Pali term atapa, ardent, which is related to tapas, which is to burn, both in a physical sense and in a mental sense. It's here that Ajahn Lee parts ways with the commentary. The commentary identifies sampajanya, which I translate as alertness, as the wisdom faculty. And the way they explain it explains why it's usually translated in other places as clear comprehension. You comprehend a situation, particularly you comprehend it in terms of the three characteristics. Now, it does mention there are some people who say that sampajanya means knowing what you're doing while you're doing it, but it gets pretty snide. It says even jackals know that they're howling when they howl. Babies know that they're sucking at their mother's breast when they're sucking at their mother's breast. There's nothing special about that. But it's usually a giveaway when the commentary gets snide that its explanations are not all that strong. So I think it's wise to look into why Ajahn Lee would identify ardency as the wisdom faculty. And it comes down to two sorts of things. One is simply trying to do your best is wise. You start out with right view, realizing that the causes of suffering lie inside. They come from what you do, and so you realize the wise thing to do with that teaching is to try to develop skillful qualities inside so you're not creating suffering. So the simple fact of wanting to be ardent is wise in and of itself. And then as you are ardent in developing skillful qualities, your wisdom grows, your discernment grows, you learn new lessons that you don't learn simply from reading the texts or thinking about them. For instance, you learn the point of just right. We talked about this the other day. The Buddhist path is the middle way. But it doesn't mean you're middling in everything. You put in a middling effort in your sitting meditation, a middling effort in your walking meditation, a middling effort to fight your defilements. What it does mean is that you have to find out through your own powers of observation, through your own experience, testing things, learning from your tests, what is just right for a particular situation. As the Buddha said, there are some causes of suffering that go away when you simply look at them. Others require what he calls a fabrication of exertion. We have to figure out how the way you're breathing is contributing to the problem, how the way you're talking to yourself is contributing to the problem, how the perceptions you hold in mind, how the feelings you hold, pay attention to, are causing the problem, and learn how to change. Breathe in a way that's more calming if you're angry. If you're thinking about how much you want something, think about the drawbacks of having that thing or having that person. What are your perceptions around something that make it attractive or make it disgusting? Can you change those perceptions? Find perceptions that are equally true. There's no perception can represent the totality of anything. So what's missing in your perception of something that could help calm down whatever the defilement is? You learn this from trying to be skillful. This requires a lot more of your own powers of observation than simply going to an extreme in something. Extremes are pretty easy. They're also easy to blame on other people. If you follow an extreme path and it doesn't work, well, you blame the person who told you to follow the extreme path. If you're told to follow a path of middle way, or what's just right, then the responsibility is yours to find what is just right. So that's the kind of wisdom, that's the kind of discernment that's responsible. It becomes yours through the fact that you try to do your best in being ardent in the practice. There's also the question of learning how to think strategically. There are a lot of things in the path that you have to develop first before you let them go. You have to develop a strong sense of self, a healthy sense of self, that you're capable of following the path, that you're going to be responsible in doing it, confident that you will benefit, and willing to look at your actions, take responsibility for them, and change them if you see that they're not skillful. Okay, that sense of self is something eventually you're going to have to let go of, but you have to use it to begin with. You hear too many times people saying, well, because the Buddha said there is no self, just let go of your sense of self and that solves the problem. It doesn't solve problems. It actually can create a lot of problems. First, you've got to have a strong sense of self that's trained in the practice. Then you let it go. The other issues are thinking strategically. Sometimes you're angry at somebody, and you hear that you should have thoughts of goodwill, and it's really hard to have goodwill. Well, the Buddha gives you an alternative. Remind yourself that when you are angry, you're going to say and do things, stupid things. And if your enemy finds out, the enemy's going to be pleased. Do you want to please that person? No. They'll try to get your anger under control. That's using spite to control your anger. Spite may not be a very skillful mental state, but it's better than giving in to your anger. You're controlling your anger out of spite. That's a skillful use of spite. Then as the mind begins to calm down, then you can drop the spite and realize, okay, this really is for your own well-being. Then you can let it go. So that's the second thing you learn. You learn how to think strategically. The third thing you learn, of course, is that you learn to look around. We're following a path here. It's like following a trail in the wilderness. You may have a wilderness guide that says, go to this trailhead here. This is where it's located. This is how you get there. And this is how you follow the path. Watch out, there are these places where you might get lost. So turn left here, turn right here, look for this sign, look for that sign. So it tells you how to get along the path. But it doesn't tell you everything you're going to see. It may point out a few major features that you're going to see. But there's going to be a lot that depends on your own powers of observation. This is especially important in the practice of establishing mindfulness. As the Buddha himself points out, when you're focused on the breath, you've got the body in and of itself, but you've also have feelings. The fact that you're alert to the breath, that creates a feeling of pleasure in the breath. Your mind state is also there, the mind state of mindfulness. The equanimity of putting aside greed and distress with reference to the world is a mental quality. So you've got body, feelings, mind, mental qualities, all right there. You can see their interactions. And seeing their interactions is what enables you to gain insight. Remember, insight is not just seeing things as they are, it's seeing things as they come to be, how they are part of a causal chain. So you can learn how to manipulate that causal chain, become more interested in things as they can be. In other words, things you can make into a path, how you manipulate causes and effects to make a path to something that's beyond cause and effect. So those are some of the ways in which ardency is wise. Just a simple desire to give rise to what's skillful is a wise desire. As you follow through with that desire and use your powers of observation to see what works and what doesn't work, you learn a lot of lessons you may not have learned simply by reading the books. It's in this way that you borrow the Buddha's wisdom and you make it your own. This is how you become wise right where the problem is. Not in the concepts, but in the actual motions of the mind, as you learn how to train them in the right direction.